Welcome to the Monday edition of the Talk of Emporia. This is the Central Care Cancer Center edition of the Talk of Emporia, and we're very pleased to be joined once again this month by medical oncologist and hematologist Dr. Ali Wazir. Dr. Wazir, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Ron.
It is great to have you back here. Hope you had a happy new year.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy new year to all the listeners and yourself, Ron.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So, brand new year is here, 2023, and I understand you've been busy. You've been keeping busy, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, the practice has been growing, and it's very busy. But, you know, we're still able to, give all the attention to our patients and stuff. So pretty excited.
Well, it's great to have you here, as always. You are a wealth of information, and it's stuff like this that people can certainly use and take advantage of. And, of course, Central Care Cancer Center right here locally in Emporia at 1401 West 12th. You can call 342-1117 or log on to cccancer.com for more information. Well, January is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, and today Dr. Wazir is in to educate us on the facts of cervical cancer. Dr. Wazir, first, I guess, there's kind of a blanket question here. What exactly is cervical cancer?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's an important question to start off with. So cervical cancer would mean any cancer that comes out of the cervix. But, you know, the vast majority of the cancers of the cervix are like one kind of cancer, which are squamous cell cervical cancer that starts at this area of transition between, your cervix and your vagina, you know. So in the areas of transition in your body, and there are a couple of them, those are always hot spots for cancer. Like you have an area of transition in your esophagus, for example, where the covering of the esophagus changes from one type of covering to the covering that's more common in the stomach. And then you have an area of transition in your anal canal. In the same way, you know, the cervix is an area of transition. And for whatever reasons, these are kind of hotspot for infections by certain viruses and also, cancer down the road.
How many different types of cervical cancer are there, and how do they maybe affect the prognosis?
Yeah, so, you know, as we're talking about the area of transition, the most common, like more than 90%, the one which we consider cervical cancer is squamous cell cancer of the cervix. And this is further subdivided into, the ones which are caused from the HPV virus, which are the vast majority, versus the ones which aren't caused by the HPV virus, which are a smaller minority. Apart from this, you could have other cancers of the cervix. Small cell cancers can happen in the cervix. You can have, adenocarcinoma of the cervix, which are rare but can happen. Those, usually are thought to be more similar to uterine cancers. Essentially, when we're talking about cervical cancer, we kind of restrict it to the most common type, which is like the squamous cell cancer, which unfortunately, most of them are caused by the HPV virus.
So is cervical cancer common?
Well, I mean, world over, it's fairly common. In America, the numbers are smaller, but like 14,000 women will get diagnosed with cervical cancer. And unfortunately, around 4,000 every year die from cervical cancer. The reason the rates have gone down so much over the years was that, we had the introduction of the pap smear in the 70s, which was the first test that we developed that prevented cancer. So the way that works is that if you think about the natural history of like cancer in the cervix, what happens is that the cervix is an area that can get infected with the HPV virus. Most of the time, that's not a big deal. Most of us at some point in our life will get infected by a certain type of HPV virus, right? There are over 40 common subtypes, some people say even more than that. Out of these, around two of them are thought to be cancer-causing. So those are the HPV subtypes 16 and 18. And then there are other subtypes, that are not, that also cause cancer, but to a lesser degree. I think they're 23, 24. Don't quote me on it, but you can look it up.
Okay.
But essentially, those HPV viruses, like what happens is that they'll, go into the cells in the cervix, because this is kind of a weak area in your body because it's an area of transition. And then over a period of 5 to 6 years, they slowly change those cells to become dysplastic, more and more aggressive, till they become this lesion that's called a CIN lesion, C-I-N. So that's cervical interepithelial neoplasia. So that's a cancer that hasn't figured out how to escape the cervix and go into the blood and spread or spread to other organs. So if you catch, the cervix cancer, so to speak, or at least the lesion that becomes the true cervical cancer early, they can kind of be taken care of right there at the OBGYN office, where they have a special microscope called a colposcope to kind of look at the cervix, and then they can use a hot wire called a LEAP. Called a LEAP procedure to kind of like take that off the cervix. So, that's kind of important why for young women, we have them go to their OBGYNs every year and get a pap smear and an HPV test and also have a look at the cervix because, if there are any lesions and stuff, they could be precancerous lesions from this HPV infection.
Demographically, any more susceptible than others? Doctor was here.
Yeah, the demographics of advanced cervical cancer, I mean, it's a bit of a tragedy, unfortunately, So, you have to kind of understand that the one factor now that determines whether you get this cancer or not, unfortunately, in the current era, is whether you got the Gardasil vaccine or not. The Gardasil vaccine got updated recently, and now you have the 9-valent, so it kind of covers not just the 2 or 4 most common subtypes, but almost all the subtypes that have the potential of not only causing cervical cancer, but also anal cancer, cancer of of the vagina, also cancer of the of the throat. The HPV virus is becoming a very common cause of head and neck cancer as well. But essentially, people who get the shot, they don't tend to develop cervical cancer. People who unfortunately don't take the shot, they have a high risk of developing cervical cancer. The other folks who are at risk of developing cervical cancer are, smoking. Smoking has been associated with cervical cancer. It's associated with all squamous cell cancer, so that's not unusual. It's associated with head and neck cancer and other squamous cell cancers, and also the same kind of cancer in the lung, but also of the cervix too. But, the most important is whether they got exposed to the Gardasil vaccine or not.
Dr. Ali Wazir, Central Care Cancer Center, joining us on our Central Care Cancer Center Talk of Emporia. Dr. Wazir, how long does it take for cervical cancer to develop?
Yeah, so we kind of talked about this. It's, the lead time, so there are lead times for everything, like polyp turning into colon cancer, it's thought to be 7 years. Cervical cancer, the lead time is thought to be 3 to 5 years. From an initial lesion of which is dysplasia to CIN, and then CIN, it goes to CIN 1, 2, and 3, and from after that it becomes cervical cancer. So, it's thought to be around 3 to 5 years where, a lesion can turn into cervical cancer.
This is the Central Care Cancer Center Talk of Emporia. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back to the Central Care Cancer Center edition of the Talk of Emporia here for January. January is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, and we're very pleased and fortunate to have with us again Dr. Ali Wazir, a medical oncologist and hematologist with Central Care Cancer Center at 1401 West 12th Avenue here in Emporia. We've been touching on the basics of cervical cancer. Dr. Wazir, what are the risk factor signs and symptoms?
Yeah, so, we talked about it, not having the Gardasil vaccine, smoking. There's certain socioeconomic risk factors that are thought to increase the risk of getting HPV. So they're kind of associated tangentially, poor socioeconomic status, having more sexual partners increases your risk of having, exposure to HPV. But I have to really stress that, getting the Gardasil vaccine by far is the biggest modifiable risk factor, probably way more important than even smoking cessation specifically for cervical cancer. So there was a study in Sweden, which was published a couple of years ago, and essentially over there, followed two sets of children, who most of them got their shot before the age of 14. So you have to remember that the vaccine works if you get the shot at a young age. Once you kind of get exposed to the HPV, the infection already kind of takes root. So, even though the Gardasil vaccine is now approved up to the ages of 45, You know, the fact is that it's probably most effective when, you know, in younger children at age of 13 or 12 or that age, you know. So that's when they should get the shot. And that's when they get the best protection over their the whole lifetime. But again, you know, people who haven't gotten the shot, they should still get the shot because it will offer them some degree of protection. And, you know, this is reflected in the FDA, which has opened the label for the Gardasil shot up to the ages of 45, both male and women. That's very important. So both male and women, because in men also it prevents the throat cancer and anal cancer and other cancers. So that's the very most important thing. In women, the average age they get the cervical cancer is 55. So very young women. It's a disease of very young women, right? And you can have women in their 30s and 40s who get cervical cancer. And that's not an unusual presentation.
So, you know, getting the vaccine obviously is a good preventative measure to take. Is it the only preventative measure?
I mean, there are other things like, you know, not to smoke, etc. But in all honesty, the vaccine, it is so effective that I know I'm kind of like beating a dead horse here, but, you know, it's very important. If your kids are of that age, 12, 13, 14, you know, it's not that expensive. Most insurances cover it. They will thank you because, you know, this is a lot of, you know, as a cancer doctor, like when you see something preventable, you know, come in and again, you know, from smoking or from like not taking a vaccine and stuff, you know, it's doubly tragic, you know, because a lot of lives kind of like cut short, a lot of morbidity, you know, radiation, chemotherapy, none of this stuff is easy to go through, especially if you're young or even older, you know. So if all that can be prevented by just one shot, I mean, honestly, like for me, it's like, you know, if it was up to me, I would make it part of the law and part of the childhood vaccination series where everybody just gets it by default. There's no good reason why people should not get this shot. But again, I do understand that everybody makes their own health decisions. But the payoff is it's really big. It's all, you know, the only other thing that comes close to it in cancer medicine is probably the hepatitis B vaccination, which prevents liver cancer. But in all honesty, this prevents three different kind of cancers and prevents it very well, extremely well.
So is this vaccine readily available?
Yes, it's available everywhere. It has been available for the last 30 years now. You know, so, and they've actually improved the vaccine quite a bit because now it prevents all nine possible types of cervical cancer that can cause cancer, all the nine types, right? So it has become more and more effective over the years, and it's very readily available.
So do you just ask your healthcare professional, your doctor?
Yeah, if you're under the age of 45, just tell them that, hey, you know, I heard about this. I need the cervical cancer vaccine. But probably the most, the group that really, really needs it is, you know, the young people of today, you know, 15 and under young. The earlier you get it between this ages of like 11, 12, 13, 14, the more effective it is.
What about screening measures for people, Dr. Wazir, who may be at higher risk?
Yeah, so that's the, you know, that's very important. You know, so the pap smear and the HPV test, both are very important to do and follow up with. The HPV test has actually made it so that you only have to be screened every 3 years or so based on whether you have the, you know, the high-risk women are defined by the ones who have the HPV infection, right? So if you do have the HPV infection, so you have to be screened every year, with, you know, a pelvic exam and, you know, the pap smear to kind of make sure nothing is happening. But if you don't have the HPV infection at the time of, then it can be stretched out to, like, you know, having a pap smear every 3 years or so. But, of course, you should talk to your PCP, primary care doctor, who, you know, are kind of the professionals who are up to date about the screening recommendations.
We're with Dr. Ali Wazir, medical oncologist, hematologist, Central Care Cancer Center. This is the Central Care Cancer Center edition of the Talk of Emporia. Stay tuned. We are back with more right after this. Welcome back to the Monday edition of the Talk of Emporia. This is the Central Care Cancer Center edition of the Talk of Emporia, and we're very pleased to be joined once again this month by Dr. Ali Wazir, medical oncologist and hematologist with Central Care Cancer Center. January is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, and we've been on that topic here this morning on the Talk of Emporia. Dr. Wazir, what's about options for treatment cervical cancer?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the unfortunate thing that, you know, early cervical cancer doesn't have a lot of symptoms or any symptoms. You know, you can have sometimes like spotting, like bleeding and stuff, but in all honesty, that is rare. So usually when it's caught, it's fairly advanced. And by fairly advanced, I mean, you know, you have to kind of understand the cervix, the way it's situated. It's in a very, it's in an area of a body that's very close to many important organs. So the cervical cancer by itself doesn't have to be very advanced for it to kind of like invade into other organs. And by other organs, I mean, you know, it can invade into the bladder, for example, the rectum, for example. A common presentation I've seen a couple of times in practice, you know, even in training, are women who come in with like essentially kidney failure because, you know, the ureters, the tubes that take urine from the kidneys to the bladder, they run right next to the cervix. So if you have a cervical cancer, it doesn't take much for those to get blocked off. And, you know, that unfortunately means that it's already pretty advanced. If you do manage to catch it early in a precancerous state, then, you know, you have local treatment options like which we talked about, which can be done at the OBGYN office. And they'll make a determination whether it's more advanced, you know, whether you need other scans to kind of see if it's a, you know, a higher stage, like a stage 2, stage 3, or does it involve lymph nodes, etc. In those stages, if it's still kind of early stage, but more than what can be done, not precancerous, but actually cancerous, usually the women will get like a hysterectomy with the removal of the cervix, you know. Treatment after that really depends on the extent of the cancer, right? Whether you need radiation after that, yes or no. Beyond that, like sometimes, you know, it's too far along that where surgery cannot be offered if it's like, you know, in other organs. The one good thing is that even in this stage, you can kind of treat it with a combination of chemotherapy and radiation. There's a chemotherapy called cisplatin that's very effective when kind of like tied to the radiation, and both of them together can kind of cure most women with even this higher stage. But once, you know, it's more than that, or you had treatment and it comes back, you know, that then we're talking about like stage 4 disease, cervical cancer. And that is a very challenging disease where we haven't made a lot of headway. The last big thing that they came up with was that you used to treat it with like two chemotherapies, right? Two kind of older chemotherapies. So they added an agent called Avastin, which is not a chemotherapy, but a drug that stops new blood vessel growth. And that was like the last update. And I think it was like in the 2011, I believe, that was when they came up with that. And for many years, there was nothing, no treatment paradigm that improved the women's lifespan on top of that. But more recently, they have added like immunotherapy, which we have talked about in the past for lung cancer and you know, bladder cancer, etc. So now that's approved for the front line. So a woman, who is diagnosed with the cervical cancer, which is stage 4, which has kind of spread from the cervix to other organs and is not thought to be curative, is treated with this combination of chemotherapy, which is four different drugs. And honestly, it's a pretty heavy chemotherapy to kind of deliver. So it's immunotherapy along with Avastin, which is a drug to stop blood vessel growth, along with two of the traditional chemotherapies. The problem with this whole issue is that even though it improves the women's lifespan and everything, it's not thought to be curable, right? And once you kind of run through all of these options, there's no very there aren't a lot of good second line options for cervical cancer.
So if you're using both the radiation and chemotherapy, possible side effects for that treatment?
Well, it's fairly well tolerated, believe it or not. The main side effect women do complain about is like fatigue. There's some women who are more sensitive and they can have like bladder issues and rectal issues from the radiation causing like some damage. So, you know, they'll have like increased bowel movements, etc. of that. But, you know, that's honestly not the most common. Most women, because you have to kind of understand that these are usually younger women, so they tend to do okay with the radiation and chemotherapy together, that treatment. But, you know, With radiation, you can always have, like, you know, skin issues, you know, kind of like a bad sunburn. But more seriously, you can have, like, bladder issues, you know, blood in the urine, or changes in how you urinate. You can have, like, colon issues with, you know, tendency to go to the bathroom more, you know, from all that radiation exposure.
Central Care Cancer Center. It's quality cancer care close to home right here in Emporia, up at 1401 West 12th Avenue. If you have any questions, please call us, Central Care Cancer Center, at 620-342-1117, or you can log on to cccancer.com. Very fortunate to have Central Cancer Center here locally, right here in Emporia. And Dr. Wazir, it's always a pleasure to have you in here, giving us great information, and we can't wait to get you back next month.
Yeah, thanks, Ron, and thanks for having me, and thank you for spreading this message out, because, you know, for cervical cancer, something preventable, we can actually put out something out there to the public for them to consider, you know. I know in the end, everybody makes their own health decisions, but, you know, the Gardasil shot is not a bad idea, and it does prevent a lot of suffering and cancer down the road. So I'm a big advocate, and thank you for giving me this platform to talk about it.
Always great to talk to you, Dr. Wazir. Great information, as always. This has been the January edition of the Central Care Cancer Center Talk of Emporia here on KVOE Live and Local.